Future Commerce is brought to you by Link. Link makes your customers' post-purchase experience something they love through breakthrough innovation in artificial intelligence. Be sure to stick around to the middle of the show for a special offer. You can visit Link online today at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast. Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And
we have a
go ahead. Yeah, I'm so excited. Oh, yeah. I couldn't even prevent myself from continuing to talk.
Well, I'm also very excited. We've got Body Labs here with us today, a company that we've been talking about for a while. So we've got John Silly and William O'Farrell, or Bill O'Farrell, on the line with us today. And super excited to be talking with these guys. We've been keeping track of them for quite some time. And they recently released a product that we got to try out. And really excited to talk to them about the future of body data. So guys, go ahead and introduce yourselves and maybe give us a little bit of history about how you got into the industry. And we'll kind of go from there.
Cool. This is Bill O'Farrell. I'm one of the co-founders and I'm the CEO of the company. And, you know, the technology around which we built the company has a pretty long history. It was originally developed at Brown University in the group of Michael Black, who's also one of the co-founders. He was a computer vision professor at Brown and now runs the Perceiving Systems Group at the Max Planck Institute in Germany. So he's a director of the one of the Max Planck Institutes. And I guess the technology itself has been under development, you know, probably since 2006. And originally, in fact, the notion of being able to sort of identify a 3D body was Michael kind of got the idea when he was asked to help solve a crime, use computer vision to solve a crime. It was a crime in Virginia, and there was some videotape surveillance. They couldn't quite figure out, you know, the size and shape of the perpetrator. So he sort of gave that to his class as an assignment from this 2D information. What could you tell? And I think it was could they fit behind the wheel of a certain car? And that sort of led him to explore this notion of shape and pose and motion. And you know, accordingly, we think we've got really the world's leading technology on being able to provide a 3D avatar, fully animatable, based on, you know, from sources that range from 2D photos and video, 3D if you have a scan, or even, you know, things like measurements. So the technology's got a long history. The company started 2013. We licensed the technology from Brown and from the Max Planck Institute, and we've grown kind of from three co-founders to about 40 people today.
Hi, and this is John Silly. I'm the VP of marketing here at Body Labs. And, you know, what's interesting about where we are today is, you know, in the past, we've been reliant upon a lot of, you know, 3D inputs or measurements. And in the past, we've done a really great job being able to take kind of a variety of different input types, whether that's a 3D scanner, whether that's simple measurements or a whole host of other things, and be able to accurately replicate your 3D avatar. What was really exciting moving into the summer of last year is we started taking this new deep learning approach where we could then understand both the 3D pose and 3D shape predicted from something like a conventional image or something like a commoditized 2D sensor. And from that standpoint, it was really exciting to us because, as you can imagine, you know, not everybody's got a 3D scanner kicking around at home. And so it was really compelling to be able to increase the total addressable amount of either users, customers, et cetera, or their own customers with access to conventional imagery or conventional sensors, whether that's through a smartphone, whether that's through photos you've already uploaded on a social media platform. And we asked ourselves, okay, what are a series of things and techniques that we can do to be able to package this capability out where we could get people using and touching Body Labs technology, but do it in a really compelling and exciting way. And so that's where Mosh, you had alluded to this new product that we had released a couple weeks ago, Mosh, M-O-S-H, which is a new mobile application that we released for iOS, at least for now specifically, empowers you to really touch the Body Labs tech from the same standpoint I just mentioned, using normal imagery of you inside a photo and be able to do something fun and engaging with it, with rendering, whether 3D effects or other things on top of that. And so that's kind of where we're at today, moving from that, you know, progress made over the summer of 2016 and now moving into 2017. And we really see a really whole host of other applications that this could be really injected inside of, whether that's, you know, retail applications, whether that's retail analytics, sizing, all sorts of fun
things. Yeah. Wow.
I think that's, oh, go ahead.
I was going to do the thing that I usually do, which is to sort of make light of the fact that you can tell these guys have a podcast, right? Because they know how to talk. This is awesome. but seriously, like, I thank you so much for coming on the show, because we have been talking about this for so long, and I'm sure you've heard my own two cents about this particular area of innovation. And you know, I know Brian's a big fan of this. I'm so excited to talk about what the, you know, the implications are on for commerce and where you think you know, the consumer value prop is. So thank you both for being on the show. Sorry, go ahead there, Brian.
No, I was just going to say similar things, which is, you know, it's super exciting to talk to a company that has such a foundational tech. I think, you know, the application for this is almost limitless in terms of you know, what we're going to be able to do. I think it's going to go into all different types of industries and affect commerce in so many different ways, from fashion design to healthcare to custom furniture. it's really quite exciting how you know, we're going to be able to use this tech to purchase things. So yeah, I think maybe you guys could probably tell it better than we can. But you know, you've already developed one product, one, you know, small application in which people can see themselves in 3D and really play around with it, which I got a chance to try, and it was really fun. But maybe talk about some other ways that you're looking to apply the tech and, you know, where you see the next steps are.
Yeah. So this is Bill. And I think with Mosh, which is, as John noted, an iPhone app, what we're doing there is we're taking a single photo, and soon we'll be doing this with video, and we're extracting the 3D pose and 3D shape. And again, we'll be doing this with video, so we'll be able to extract the motion relatively soon. So that really is the fundamental informing technology. So what else can one do with that is, to us, you know, in some ways very limitless, and we do have what we perceive as a horizontal technology. Meaning if we've extracted your 3D shape, then we can match you with other people of the same shape, so you can recommend goods and services to each other. We can match you with clothing that will fit you better. If we can extract your motion, then we can apply that to you know, your avatar in a video game, perhaps. If we can extract your shape and motion, we can drop you into virtual environments for all kinds of things. It might be, you know, an AR environment. It might be a VR environment. It might be a virtual shopping world. You can try clothes on you. So there's really sort of no limit to what we think we can do with that. And really the question for us as a company is just, how do you sort of move that into these vertical markets? We know a lot about bodies. We know a lot about shape, motion, and pose. We know less about sort of autonomous driving vehicles or the apparel industry or the video gaming industry. So really we look to partner with meaningful companies in each of those areas to deploy the early applications.
Yeah. And just to add on that too, you know, we see this world where, especially if you can understand pose and motion of what somebody is doing through a viewfinder, whether that's a smartphone camera or something else, you can unlock this whole other realm of, you know, body as a controller, right? To be able to use body related gestures, to be able to control devices in the future. So this is a little bit further out, but, you know, Bill had mentioned autonomous driving vehicles. You can imagine if there's a self-driving Uber cab that's approaching you, if you want to be able to flag that cab down or do things like pedestrian tracking, which Bill had alluded to as well. There's a whole host of things that you can do when you view both the body as a controller, but then also when you have shape on top of that, there's, you know, when you look at online retail specifically, you know, a lot of these other industries have been disrupted by e-commerce, but retail or clothing retail has had a harder time being able to get into that e-commerce space in a meaningful way. And part of the challenge has always been that you really can't try anything on or validate that something's going to fit properly. And so if you could easily provide businesses with the 3D shape of that consumer, and you could do it in an efficient and easy manner from something like a web camera or an uploaded photo from an existing user profile, you could unlock this whole other realm of both shape-based analytics, size recommendations. In the future, you could do things like virtual try-on. And that's actually a combination of both recognizing pose, motion, and shape. So it's really taking kind of the three pillars and focus areas of our technology and uniting them together to be able to do something really special. And so there's all these other verticals that can get easily disrupted. And the one thing I'll add too is, you know, some people, if you were to download Mosh, which I'm sure you guys might provide a link to in the description of this podcast, if you were to download that, many people might ask, well, you know, I've gone on Snapchat, I've gone on some other apps, like whether it's Snow or others, where there's face detection and they do all sorts of, you know, augmented 3D filters, if you will, on top of my face. But the challenge there is, you know, faces were designed to be detected. If you think about it, right? We express and emote through our face. And the way that, at a very high level, the way that the technology works is identifying really obvious landmarks on your face and correlating that using similar approaches, AI, deep learning, et cetera, to then predict where components of your face are. So your mouth, your nose, your eyes, et cetera. Bodies are a little bit more difficult, as you can imagine, because bodies are in motion. Bodies are occluded, meaning you can have parts of your body that are blocked by other parts when you're trying to capture. You can be obscured by clothing. So when you try to do things related to shape, you then need to be able to predict the body shape underneath the clothing so that you have an accurate model, as well as all the motion that's affiliated with those things. So there's all of these really challenging things that you need to compensate for when you're trying to detect full 3D. And all of those things too dictate that it's important to have 3D as opposed to this more 2D approach when you look at conventional face detection on something like a Snapchat application.
My my wife might tell you that the whole point of clothing is to occlude her body shape, which is to my question is you know, for you, and in particular, I want to hear a little bit about Mosh because I think it's kind of interesting and sort of a it's a very 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 interesting app in that. You've sort of branded it for, you know, fun and sort of social and interactive engagement. But I think there's so much more to it. And I think that, you know, it's the same thing that we've seen in social networks where there's a lot of data being gathered and sort of creating, you know, powerful value props for a consumer. For instance, and I can give a concrete example of this, I don't know that a brand like Chubby's could have existed prior to Facebook because because it was really hard to find and market specifically to, you know, guys with dad bods. It's kind of hard to, you know, You wouldn't do that through a traditional multi-million dollar national advertising campaign. It'd be hard to get someone to take a chance on something like that. And now we have very, very specific types of data that we can sort of mine. Do you see your technology being able to be applied to, you know, other areas where there's already some really great training data, like social media profiles, or do you see this interaction taking place specifically in Mosh and other applications that are purpose-built for this?
You asked a lot of questions there.
Sorry, I tend to do that. Go right ahead.
No, let me try to peel back the onion skins a little bit. pardon me. So, you know, kind of at the highest level, Mosh, we feel like, is both, you know, an introduction to the world of what's now possible with technology like ours. And it's also sort of habituating people to some degree to be comfortable, you know, sort of thinking of their body in the digital format. A lot of what we do doesn't necessarily require that someone see their 3D body. I mean, if we know the math around your geometry, we can easily recommend clothing without you or anyone else seeing it. But inversely, you know, the notion that you've got your body as this digital presence and you can do things to it or with it or for it is, you know, a relatively new phenomenon. So I think at one level, the kind of whimsical part of Mosh is a way of getting people kind of used to it and, you know, thinking about a body model in ways that are not really all that intellectual, but just more sort of intuitive. So I think that's one thing. And I think along that continuum is that, again, you know, we have this really deep understanding of human geometry and motion and pose, and where that becomes valuable is not, I mean, you know, seeing yourself move could be useful for you know, medical and fitness and related applications. Mm-hmm. But where that really becomes valuable is when you start marrying it with and correlating it to other kinds of data. So just exactly what you were saying, you know, if we know that there are 10,000 people out there with exactly the same body geometry as you, then you can sort of say, if you choose to, you can sort of share that fact with those 10,000 people, and you can begin to look at what they wear, what they use for a tennis racket or a set of skis, and you begin to correlate the information that may be found in social networks or just in collections of people to begin, you know, making some really powerful insights into, you know, what you can do with and for your digital body as well as your physical body. Did that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, build on that too with apparel specifically. Let's say, you know, we talk briefly about e-commerce in the apparel space or even just the physical space. If you had that customer's 3D shape, you know, what's unique about our tech in conjunction with everything else we just mentioned is that, you know, to Bill's point, you know, matching bodies together, right? Our tech empowers really anyone but us to be able to correlate that together, the 3D information we have about each individual person. So we can take the micro side, so the individual conversion for that user, helping them, let's say, with trying on, recommendations, understanding if it's going to fit. But then we can also do the macro level where after the fact, if you're really anybody, but let's just use apparel as an example, you could then understand, okay, regionally in the New York area, I want to review anybody that has used Body Labs as technology on our site and correlate that with metadata and purchasing behavior that I have about that user or a type of user. So I can say, okay, anybody that bought a small, this is their average body type. And do the measurements that I can then extract from that 3D information correlate with the 3D or the measurement information that I have to design that small, that size small? And are there modifications, are there changes that I want to do to my size small to address the people that are already shopping there? Or what happens if somebody purchases something, returns it, and what was their sizing? for that? And what was their, and based off of their sizing, if I average them together, what do they look like? And maybe I introduce new sizing or modify my design practices based off of the understanding I have there. So there's this balance too of not only taking our technology, but using that technology in conjunction and with support of the information and the purchasing behavior they already have. The missing piece has been that they've never had insight into their customer's shape. And so that specific piece is going to be really valuable. And the inclusion of being able to now do it without the hindrance or the handcuffing of relying on enabling technology and using technology that already is out there in 2D imagery, in commoditized sensors, enables us to really expand that to really everybody.
I think, it's interesting, and I'm going to go a little bit off subject, but it's related, we see also some other emerging techs that I think will really play well into your body data, and one of those in particular is 3D printing, because you talk about size, but now we're going to have exact measurements for someone's body, and with, basically on-demand printing or clothes printing, or even some form of, bespoke clothing creation, we're going to be able to create clothes that are a perfect fit all the time. And so, as those technologies develop as well, actually it's going to start getting more into, design and other points about the body as well, like combining someone's complexion with their shape and creating optimal looks for that person. It's not that far off.
That's right.
Not only is this going to affect commerce, but again, I'm speaking specifically of fashion, but this is going to affect how design even works. Like, I could almost see design becoming, and I've talked about this on the show before, but this could be to the point where design can sort of almost have an open source feel to it, because all of a sudden, design is something that happens in the virtual world, and people can take files that, and essentially, create their own iterations of those designs. And the way that the whole fashion world works might get a little bit upended. I know I'm kind of pushing the bounds of where we can go, but if this actually works, it could happen very quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think we like to say that we provide the human body as a digital platform. So if you believe in this world of increasing mass customization, where things like 3D printers, computer-aided design, robotics, as those begin to coalesce and make their way into the economy and into the manufacturing supply chain, then clearly you need the human body as the platform around which goods and services are designed, manufactured, bought, sold, recommended, et cetera, et cetera. So we're very much of the mind that the world that you just described is coming, and it's coming relatively quickly. I mean, we'll say in the apparel space, unlike a lot of other vertical industries, really you've still got a supply chain issue there. And democratizing design is probably a little easier because you can actually design through these computer-aided design programs. Although there, again, there are still some drawbacks because the physics of the actual garment, the apparel, is hard to simulate. But even being able to democratize the design and let people adapt and change and make their own designs is one piece. The real challenge, I think, in the apparel space is the supply chain of manufacturing. And now we're beginning to see things like laser cutting, fabric, automated sewing machines. Those kinds of advances are beginning to make their way into the supply chain. And if you think about it, the sewing machine hasn't changed much in a couple hundred years.
Right.
But now with, you know, sort of machine vision and things like that, we're really starting to see automated sewing machines becoming viable. I think it'll be a long time before, not a long time, but, you know, a cognizable time before they get deployed in massive ways, just because the expense and the change management's an issue. But once you can, I mean, clearly once in the apparel industry, once you solve that supply chain manufacturing issue, then the whole world changes. And we're yep. seeing that in every other industry. You know, it's already happened in a large degree. So we very much think, you know, Body Labs provides the human body as a digital platform and enable that mass customized world.
It's amazing. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other things you mentioned, just other industries that you can see change coming. I think gaming and virtual communities and even, you know, sort of dating sites I might throw in there as well. It's going to be quite interesting.
The dating site introducing a whole new way to get catfished.
Well, actually, so the interesting thing about this is I wonder if you could sort of, I mean, it could actually help prevent catfishing in that, you know, I think that, you know, these, you know, with body data, you could actually have sort of verified body type settings.
I know. You got to be a little cautious of that, but we're right there with you. I mean, there's a ton of industries that could disrupt. However, depending on what information people are willing to relinquish, dating might be one of the more surprising ones.
You know, you might be able to establish that person really is, you know, fit and slim, as they say that. I do think that again, you know, providing the body's digital platform, we're really kind of bridging the divide between the virtual and the physical world. You know, we talk about, like, Alexa is a great example. You know, you've got a virtual assistant there. You have some sense that this is a real person, and yet there's no physical embodiment. Is being able to provide for that application or similar ones, you know, sort of a digital presence to go along with the sort of digital or the virtual services. You know, we think that's an important component of what we can add to this increasingly kind of overlapping virtual and physical world. You see it in sort of the virtual assistants, certainly, you know, trying on apparel. You see it in gaming, being able to drop yourself in and you know, you want to take Stephon Curry's jump shot, you know, that's imminently doable. And inversely, if you want him to do your jump shot, that's doable. So there's all kinds of places that we see. And in many ways, you know, sort of much more well prepared for what we deliver than the apparel space. You know, the apparel space is still very much a, you know, physical touch and feel kind of place.
Link is the best way to get your customers coming back to buy again. Link's Cortex AI platform creates rich relationships with every customer at every touch point on every platform. From Magento to Shopify, Hybris and Demandware, over 300 logistic and reverse logistic carriers around the world are integrated with Link. Link brings your brand to where customers are on Facebook Messenger, Alexa, SMS, and more. Let Link add the power of artificial intelligence to your business. For a limited time, Future Commerce listeners can claim an exclusive trial offer for 30 days free of Link Cortex. Sign up today and visit them online at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast.
What do you think about, you know, this particular application being applied in the area of sort of medical sciences for, you know, therapy and rehab and for, you know, maybe for sports training? I know they are already to some degree, but it seems like you guys have sort of cornered the market on a better, like a fundamentally better technology.
Yeah, that's actually a really timely question because, you know, being able to do, like, you know, motion capture mm-hmm. stuff, sort of being able to do like, sort of somebody track somebody's gait when they're running or something like that, has traditionally been a very sort of costly proposition. You have to sort of put a bunch of markers on different parts of the body
and yeah.
get this whole setup. We actually can really now effectively do that from a smartphone. Just, we can extract, we basically do markerless mocap. So being able to do gait training, track your golf swing, compare your golf swing to Tiger Woods' golf swing. This is all stuff that's pretty much, it's really close to being reality and not in some, high-end training center, but really kind of, with you and your buddy on the golf course or, So I think that there's a lot of places there. Physical training, likewise, if you've had an injury, you can sort of maybe have a video of how you used to run or used to ski or you used to kick a soccer ball. And now, how you're doing it now and compare to see if you can get back to where you were. When it comes to things like plastic surgery, I think we're not quite, we don't necessarily know that we want to do plastic surgery. I mean, we're still sort of millimeters off. Same with prosthetics. There's a bunch of issues about prosthetics, and that really has to be super precise. But a 3D cast, print, break your arm, and you need a 3D cast printed. That's pretty doable. I mean, we could see that happening in the relatively near term. So again, we find that the breadth of applications and verticals to be pretty wide, and just being able to deploy them into each of these verticals really just requires us to have a little bit of industry knowledge that we lean on our partners to provide.
Yeah, back to the medical idea. I think also as hardware, and sort of more devices that capture other points of data sort of work their way into our homes, I think you're going to see more like virtual health related activity happen. And I know this isn't quite related to your technology specifically, but I think your technology will play into it. But ultimately, I think, as we monitor the body more and we're able to, show motion capture and so on, like people will be able to, like, let's say you dislocate your shoulder, you'll be able to, get on to a virtual session with a doctor, show them, kind of what's going on and have that captured at the same time. And maybe there'll be some sort of automated insights into what happened. ultimately, I think doctors will be able to do a lot of pushing rather than having to pull on you for the information. But that's down the road a little bit.
It requires like this federated identity management platform that's, either government controlled or something worse. I don't know. I can't think of anything worse than government controlled. provided we're all still around with the, 10 years from now. My fear is that it's going to require an immense amount of trust in somebody somewhere to safely store and control that information. And maybe us, maybe that's something, some peer-to-peer technology, blockchain might be a real transformative technology there, but we're a very, very long way away from that. If I can be the voice of reason.
I have a question. I mean, how do you feel about Facebook? Do you feel that, your personal information there, you have enough control over?
No, it's very, very valid.
but you do use it though, right?
Oh yeah. I don't know. It's become the political argument platform for me. That's Facebook is the only, that's the
I hope
only
you're
thing.
Not spreading false news.
I think I think what Bill is hitting at too is it always comes down relative to the benefit. Like we have this like security versus convenience threshold that you balance. And Facebook gives, I'm assuming, more a higher degree of convenience relative to the maybe mistrust you feel individually with the data that is stored on Facebook or other locations.
Yeah. And I was making that analogy because to me, your body model, such as it is, first of all, I think people get a little bit, kind of breathless about it, but it's just a bunch of math. It's just your geometry. It's not like naked pictures of you or things like that. But even then, our feeling is, it is owned by the consumer. So we imagine a world where everyone will have their own 3D body model as part of their digital online ID. And, you know, you can share it as you wish. If you want to just unlock it and let, for example, Amazon use it to fit you for clothing, then buy the clothing and then you lock it back up again. Great. If you want to share it, and I don't necessarily mean show it, but I just mean, you know, make other people aware of its dimensions or its shape or whatever it is, in order to have groups of people who share your same geometry and be able to recommend goods and services, then you can do that. If you want to actually throw it out there and have it, you know, dancing across the digital world, great. You know, it's really, but that's really kind of you as an individual get to decide that. That's our view of it anyway. And yeah, and that certainly where that is stored needs to be a trustworthy site. And that's definitely part of our vision. We would like to be the repository of your online digital body model, but that the consumer is the one who should control that and give permissions accordingly.
But what's also to add to that too, you know, sometimes it's also how you present 3D shape and how you present their avatar. So a good example actually is Mosh, to a degree, where there's something that's happening that is aiding in this perception of augmented reality. And as we progress to a point where this type of technology will be running in real time on a device, it's a similar approach. So even things like virtual try-on or other things of that nature, there it might be in a position where there's this data and you know that there's this data that's available to you, but sometimes the way that you present it can make people more comfortable with the actual data that we're empowering you to use. And so if we're presenting a model, sometimes you may not be always comfortable with that. But if you submit a photo and then you get a benefit back, or if you see the clothing rendered on a photo of you as opposed to a model of you, it makes it that much more real world. And then the benefits become much more obvious as opposed to any inferred security implications or privacy implications related to your 3D shape.
Yeah, Philip and I talked about this before. It's kind of two comments on this. One, I think, you know, you guys are absolutely right. As soon as consumers realize the utility of this, that will sort of outweigh privacy ultimately, as long as there's, you know, secure ways of handling. The second thing is the technology that you guys have is sort of mind-blowing in that there is any public photo of you available online, this data could actually be collected and a 3D model could be created from that photo. So that is to say, like, that in some ways, this is very private data that's also extremely public. And I think that's going to become, you know, sort of a question in a lot of people's minds, like how they go about representing themselves online. And frankly, I mean, at least for this generation of people, almost everyone has some photo of themselves available for public viewing online. In fact, if you have a headshot on Wikipedia right now, the Blipr app actually, if you scan someone's face, like a photo of them, it will pull up their Wikipedia page. It's cataloged every single photo on Wikipedia. So people are going to have to start thinking about photos and how they view, you know, their data online differently than we are now already. And so, you know, I think we've gone through a lot of change in the past few years. We're going to go through some even larger mindset switches here in the next 5 years.
No doubt. I do think, again, you know, I think the body model itself is to some degree less recognizable than a face and probably, you know, less threatening to have out there in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For now.
Yeah. But you're, you know, unequivocally, there's a photo of you on Facebook. You want to, you know, sort of run it through our shape extraction, you're done. You got your body model.
We have
no doubt the facility and the ease at which this can be done will only increase.
there's already a ton of information out there that we have no control over. I think I can own that much. The TSA in particular has probably seen more of me than my wife has. So I get that.
No doubt. No, those are millimeter wave scanners. They're getting you naked.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. I think the problem for me is the disconnect from reality. I'll be honest with you. I don't know how much I want to really know exactly what my measurements are. I'm like, you know, I'm going to lie to myself. I still have jeans. I've become my dad. I now have jeans that from like 14 years ago that I swear I fit, but I probably don't.
You know, we can solve your problem.
Yeah.
We don't have to tell you what measurements you are. We just have to tell you what fits.
Yeah. I love that.
I mean, yeah. And actually, in fact, you know, that just going back to a previous, you know, a couple of comments ago, one of the big issues is that in the apparel industry, you have a 32 waist. Come on, that describes one principal component of your body.
Yeah.
You know, we track 256 principal components. Your waist is not your geometry.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, you may care what your waist is because of the, you know, your appearance. But when you're shopping for clothes, whether you're a 32, 36, 34 is almost irrelevant because every brand has a different sizing schema. And they've got a different fit model. And they've got a different sort of a block they use to manufacture the clothes.
Yeah.
The thing you want to, I think the thing that everyone cares about is, does this clothing fit me? And so you never know. In our world, you never know your measurements. Measurements are irrelevant. The only thing that matters is, you know, here's my geometry and here's the stuff that fits. So we're solving your problem.
Yeah, I love that. Please solve my problems. This also sort of makes me think, I'm sort of always in that entrepreneurial spirit, but somebody out there, this is a free business idea, cut me a royalty check, but somebody should just create a clothing brand called Lie to Me, which just sizes everything down five or six sizes that, you know.
With the accurate sizing.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, they've already done that. It's called Double Zero. Come on.
Yeah.
So another thing, I kind of in line with what we were talking about before, that I'm interested in talking about a little bit is, you know, we talked about how you'll be able to share your body data, but also what about body data as an asset? And that is to say, you know, I think, you know, as we've got this data that we own, that we can share when we want, there's also going to be the opportunity to provide that data to companies for their use. And so if you have the right body data, companies may be interested in using that data, especially, you know, as if we get into more like full body scanning and like capturing like real image complexion, and honestly throughout your lifetime, there's going to be opportunities for companies to purchase, like, let's just talk about modeling for a minute, but like models data and then use that even posthumously for you know, advertising their clothing or whatever it is across someone's lifespan. And you'll be able, I'm thinking that there's going to have to be some sort of, and there may already be laws in place around how much you can sell, how long those rights last, whether that be a snapshot in time or over a period of time, and you know what you're like in which ways you're allowed to use that data or to represent that person doing. with that data.
Doesn't that already sort of exist to some degree? I know like there are certain sort of trademarked and copywritten people, right? Like Marilyn Monroe is a really good example. You know, her likeness and image can be repurposed for, you know, a Tiffany or in license for a Tiffany or, you know, Christian Dior ad if they want. But, you know, to use even her silhouette, it has to be, you know, you have to go through the right channels and the ownerships to do that. How does that differ from today?
But on, I guess on maybe... Sorry, just to back up on kind of packaging up that data. So, I mean, the nature of our technology, obviously, is continuing to collect data, digitize synthetic information about individuals, and then use that to help improve our model moving forward and things like that. But as you mentioned earlier, I think related to packaging that data. You know, one good example is the plus size industry. Mm-hmm. And one challenge that you run into as you start going up in size is, you know, the larger you maybe identify as, the more distribution, the weight can be distributed throughout your body. And that introduces all different types of variability related to clothing, sizing, design, et cetera. And so if you can understand accurately that market and provide better insight into that market to improve design, to improve sizing, all those things, that's one area where we've identified people might be interested to be able to purchase the data itself to help infer other things down the road. But yeah, I mean, related to the privacy thing and repackaging that information down the, in the future, it's definitely something that we should, you know, consider and evaluate moving forward. But I think what's more interesting to us, at least today, is how the data that we already have, how can it aid and improve businesses moving forward to be able to use that to improve their existing technology, clothing, et cetera.
And an important thing to underscore here is that we use that data in an anonymous aggregate way. Mm. So
yeah.
You know, your individual shape is not, you know, is not personally identifiable in any way, shape, or form. But we can sort of tell a sports apparel company, hey, you know, here's 300 swimmers, and this is the breadth of geometry of, you know, the swimmers who may be your consumers. So it's not, there's no, you know, it's not your social security number. It's not your face. It's not, you know, there's no personally identifiable information, and it is in the aggregate, you know, basically just zeros and ones. It's a bunch of, you know, kind of geometric proportions.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Yeah, I think the reason why I brought it up is just because, especially recently, Washington, which is where I'm located, introduced one of our listeners shot me an article, which sort of highlighted that Washington State is starting to really create. Or they're talking about laws that will limit how you collect that information. And so I think it's really relevant right now, and lawmakers are actually starting to pay attention to it a little bit more.
I mean, as well they should. And I, you know, again, I'm we try to sort of make the point, but we spend a lot of time with our partners, you know, sort of going over, well, you know, the security and privacy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I get it. And I'm, you know, I'm a big advocate of privacy. You know, I think it's fundamental. I would only say again, you know, when it comes down to your 3D geometry, it's not really as, shall we say, you know, as personal as it is, it is not, I think, a dangerous, you know, it doesn't have the same kind of implications as your social security number, your bank account information, your credit card information, right. Even your birthday, you know? So it's really just, it's a circle or a square. It's just, you know, it's just a different geometry.
Yeah, totally. And I think what's really exciting about what you guys are doing is that, as you mentioned, you're creating a secure way for people to be able to manage that data, and own it, and share it as they will, which I think is going to be absolutely necessary as we're moving forward. There will be companies like yours that allow people to sort of manage how they use their body as a platform.
Indeed. And, you know, we're really sort of at the beginning stages of this. So this time last year, you know, we really were at a point where if you had a 3D sensor on your phone, we could give you a body model. And that was pretty serious friction to adoption. Now with a photo or a video, we can give you a body model. You know, the need for building up the secure environment in which you can house your body model will grow because now people can do it much more easily. And exactly. That's definitely very much in our sights.
Can I ask a different question? This is kind of an oddball question, but you got my gears turning. So you sort of evolved the product. It went from, you know, sensor based to sort of, you know, just image recognition or, you know, extracting data out of images, even still images. What could the next step be? I mean, how much could you potentially learn from the human voice or breathing patterns or, you know?
We're training that model right now via this podcast. So.
just for the record, one of my previous companies was a speech recognition company. So I know a lot more about that than believe me, you want to know.
Yeah.
We're body folks.
Sure.
The voice, that's a whole other set of things. And I think for us, the bigger question is, can we really encompass the full breadth of information and knowledge and data that you want about 3D human body shape? Can we encompass, all ethnicities? Can we encompass everything from, little tiny babies, from infants to geriatrics? Can we encompass sort of the data that the longitudinal data that goes into aging, to pregnancy, to other things, to growing, things like that? So that's really where we focus, and we have by far the largest amount of training data that underlies our models compared to any other company in the world or any other institution in the world. But there's still tons more for us to collect and to correlate.
Yeah, to add just slightly on that, one thing we mentioned briefly, which is, clothing is still relative bottleneck related to predicting shape, pose, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. We talked about clothing itself can obscure your body shape. One thing that we're exploring is the ability to be able to really kind of identify the pixels in an image that are clothing and build a model that can compensate for the information that we're detecting as obvious clothing artifacts within the photo, understand where there's a body that's exposed, and then take that information with existing, shape prediction, pose prediction, et cetera, and then fuse all that together to make the shape, the pose, and all that fun stuff, motion, at more accurate moving forward.
That's awesome.
One more question.
We're out of time, Brian. One question, quick.
I know.
We need to have you guys back some point. It'd be awesome. But carry on, Brian. One last one.
Yeah. So I know that Mosh was, sort of your most recent release. What is next? What's the next step that you can talk about?
I think the more interesting thing is what capabilities are we going to unlock, and how are we going to make Mosh better, but then also just our underlying core technology better to empower all these other verticals, categories, et cetera. One thing I think is pretty apparent, you may have noticed when you're using Mosh, is for all of its benefits with detecting pose, et cetera, there's inherent value when you make that real time. And when you make that real time, there's a lot of other separate requirements that may need to happen in order to be able to do that cost effectively, but then also more efficiently and effectively for the user. And so being able to take something like what we're doing, which is happening via a server. So for Mosh, again, the user uploads a standalone image. We process it really quickly, just the pose of the individual inside that detected photo, deliver it back to the user, and then all the fun 3D graphics are rendered via the device client side. But moving forward with real time, all of that magic will have to happen more than likely on the device. So getting, our convolutional neural network, CNN, deep learning, whatever you want to call it, and all of the other bells and whistles that from our standpoint, from a core tech that's operating on a server, getting that efficient enough to be able to run using something like an iPhone GPU, et cetera, is something we're really heavily exploring and is something we're looking to possibly deliver in the very near term. And so those are really exciting things, because it'll make Mosh, for this concrete example, make Mosh significantly better, more engaging, more just better rendered 3D content, all that fun stuff. But it'll support all these other separate initiatives with businesses looking to build off of that technology moving forward.
Oh, that's a great place to end. Well, congratulations on all of your success. We're so glad to have had you on the show. Where can people find your products, and where can people find you guys online?
Yeah, so it's bodylabs.com. Common spelling for that is our website. Mosh.ai is the website for the Mosh app. And if you just search Mosh Camera in the App Store, it should be the first thing that comes right up. Download it, give us your feedback, all that fun stuff. We're always looking to make Mosh a little bit better, not only just incrementally, but with a lot of the fun stuff that I mentioned coming down the pike.
And are either of you on Twitter or anywhere where we can point people?
I'm on Twitter, and so feel free to follow me. It's just my name. It's at John, JonCillely, silly. And essentially my handle is that. Luckily, I have a unique enough last name where my handle is that pretty much anywhere. So.
And I'm a Luddite, so no.
Oh, good. Great place to end it. Brian, why don't you wrap us up?
All right. Thanks so much for listening to Future Commerce. If you listen on iTunes, be sure to pop a 5-star review on there. Leave us feedback if you can. Always looking for your comments, feedback, anything you have to say about the show. So you can leave it in the discuss comments on our site or hit us up on Twitter or LinkedIn or wherever you can find us. Always happy to engage. If you want to get real fun, you can always listen to the show on Alexa via the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast. With that, thank you so much for listening. Keep looking towards the future. Thanks, guys, for coming on the show.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.